Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, we have a conversation with the top leader in the California Senate, Tony Atkins. But first, we talk politics with two of the smartest people I know on the political front. Bob Schrum, who now runs the USC Center for the Political Future and has run so many different campaigns for the Democratic Party over the years, including Ted Kennedy and John Kerry and Al Gore, and work with a lot of the biggest names in party politics. And Melanie Mason, an excellent reporter from Politico, who previously was working at the LA Times. We talked to them about Donald Trump and Vivek Ramaswamy and Joe Biden. We talk about Mitch McConnell and Dianne Feinstein and Gavin Newsom and the Senate race. We hear about all of that from them. So here's our conversation. Welcome to you both. Great to see you both. Bob, let's start with you. Can anybody stop Donald Trump?
Donald Trump? I think there's a possibility, not a certainty. But if one of these trials actually got held and he got convicted, and I think you might have Republicans in Iowa and New Hampshire begin to say, I don't know. I don't know if we want to do this. And the biggest asset he has in that respect, by the way, is the relative weakness of the rest of the field. Ron DeSantis turned out to be a bust. I mean, maybe that'll change, but I don't think so. But short of that, no. And Trump's in a very paradoxical position right now. All these indictments have either increased or solidified his support among Republicans. You can't tell, by the way, for sure that it's increased it, but it's certainly solidified it. At the same time, in the recent AP poll, 64% of people say they probably or definitely would not vote for Donald Trump in a general election. And 53% say they definitely would not. So I think all of this is hurting him with suburban moms, with independent voters, with young people, with the kind of people who made the difference in 2020. So he's in this strange position, doing pretty well in the primary. And I think in a perilous position in the general.
But do you look at some of the national polls in terms of the Biden-Trump matchup, and it shows kind of it split right now, although we know elections aren't won based off of national polls. It's the Electoral College and all the rest of it. So then Melanie, the question becomes, you know, who's number two, or is there value being a number two? In Bob's scenario, maybe something happens to him. And we've seen this rise of Vivek Ramaswamy, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, got more attention at the debate than anybody else. What do you make of what he's doing right now?
Well, this must delight Trump, because on that debate stage, Vivek was essentially the Trump proxy on that stage. And so if that is going to be the number two that is surging right now, that is nothing but good news for Trump, because you're not having a candidate that's making the contrast. There aren't any other candidates right now that are taking advantage of these poll numbers that Bob just talked about. And if they're not going to lean into the fact that whether or not they think these prosecutions are legitimate, that it could hurt his electability, then that's just nothing but good news for Trump. And so when you have somebody like Vivek that seems to be Trump 2.0 or in the mold of Trump, that just reinforces that tenor in the primary.
And makes it seem sort of like a contest for who's going to be the vice president instead of who is going to be the president, as we look at Vivek hit a tennis ball pretty well. Okay, Bob, but then, of course, there's Joe Biden. And we just mentioned some of those national polls. And why, if everything you just said, do we see basically him and Trump tied?
I think there's frustration about the economy that's a hangover from really what went on a year ago and from the fact that gas prices are still high. I think the people are concerned about his age. And I think that's why a presidential debate in the fall will be very important. By the way, Trump and Biden are not very different in age. The other thing I would point out to you, and this goes back to something you said at the end of our last back and forth. At this point in 1984, Walter Mondale was leading Ronald Reagan in a number of polls. At this point in 2011, Mitt Romney was leading Barack Obama. The fundamentals of the economy, if the numbers hold up the way they did today, with job creation robust but not over the top, giving the Fed room to not raise interest rates further, and we have a strong economy, and Donald Trump is the nominee, I don't think you'll see a 1 or 2 point election.
You think there actually will be a debate? between the two of them? Because I think both of them have reason not to debate.
I think Biden has a reason to debate, that he can go out there and demonstrate to people that he's in command of all this, all the subjects, that he knows what he's doing. You know, if you talk to people who work with him, they say, this guy really does have a sense of what's going on. He knows his briefs. He makes decisions that are very crisp, very clear. And he might like a chance to manifest that to the country. And Trump, I think, will have to debate.
Of course, the risk, of course, is if that's actually not true. But we'll see. Melanie, how do you see things right now in terms of the White House, in terms of the president's positioning?
Well, look, I think that if the election next year is a referendum on Biden's presidency, then I think that some of those numbers would be cause for concern. Because regardless of what the economic data points are, if people aren't feeling optimistic about the economy, if they see the gas prices, then that's a problem for the sitting president. I think that when you have Trump in the race, though, then it never really is a referendum on the sitting president, because Trump just sucks so much oxygen out of the room. We saw this in the midterms, too. I think that Republicans really struggled to make this about Joe Biden and the Democrats, because Trump and everything that comes bundled up with Trump was still running the show. And so I think that that's probably where the White House is looking at this race right now.
Speaking of the age issue, we saw Mitch McConnell this week, and it was really sad to see him freeze in the middle of a press conference, which is something that happened a few weeks back as well. We know that he had a concussion, had to be hospitalized for that. What are you hearing about what's happening behind the scenes in terms of the Republican caucus? What are people saying about McConnell?
I think that there's a lot of caution. You know, look, there is a lot of loyalty, even to people who, quite frankly, maybe are frustrated or want to challenge McConnell's leadership. He has led that caucus for so long. And I also think that there's a little bit of risk for Republicans for, you know, they want to protect not only their leader, but they also want to be able to preserve the age question if they want to hammer Joe Biden on it. And so I think they want to tread very carefully. And quite frankly, so do the Democrats, because you also have sort of a similar situation with Senator Feinstein. So no party really has the ability to call too much attention to this, because there's so much risk to themselves as well.
Yeah, and we see that with Dianne Feinstein and as well. I mean, it does raise questions. Some people saying, should there be an age limit? Should there be, should all of them go?
Well, two things. One, the Feinstein situation could be dealt with, I think, very expeditiously if Republicans would agree that they would allow Democrats to replace her on the Judiciary Committee if she resigned.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she can't resign, because Democrats will lose their majority on the Judiciary Committee, their capacity to confirm judges. Number two, I am utterly opposed to term limits. I think that what we've seen in the state legislature is it just empowers lobbyists and special interests. And, you know, for every Dianne Feinstein, Mitch McConnell, people who get in trouble, you have a Ted Kennedy. You have somebody who's up until the moment he got sick, was doing amazing things for the country. And in fact, even after he got sick, got Barack Obama committed to doing national health care. So I think it's a very bad. Let's let the voters decide. Let's not set arbitrary limits.
Reason to hire Bob Schrum. Ted Kennedy, of course, one of your best friends and somebody you worked for forever, and you're still advocating.
Well, but I think he's the perfect yeah. argument against term limits.
Yeah.
And I mean, he went to the Senate in 1962.
Yeah.
Was there till 2009 and was probably the most effective U.S. senator, at least in the 20th century and maybe more.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, when we come back, we're going to talk about California politics, where there are term limits in place.
An NBC News story from earlier this week said advisors from President Biden and Vice President Harris see your potential debate with Governor DeSantis unfavorably.
We had a call from the White House saying that does not reflect our point of view.
California Governor Gavin Newsom asked about his potential debate on Fox News with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. There seems to be a hang-up over whether there's going to be a live studio audience or not. DeSantis wants one, Newsom doesn't. Back with our panel, USC's Bob Schrum, Melanie Mason. Melanie, let's start with you. What's going on with Gavin Newsom. How do people see him in Washington? How do people see him in California? And what do you make of his maneuverings?
I think it's all pretty delicate, right? Because in some ways, he has proven himself to be a pretty effective advocate for the administration. When we saw him on Sean Hannity on Fox News a couple of months ago, he was very energetic in defending the Biden record, pushing back. And I think the takeaway largely, both from the Newsom camp and from the White House, was that that was pretty successful. The risk, of course, is you don't want to overshadow the president. And so I think that there's a lot of sort of taking the temperature on both sides just to make sure that you could, that they can sort of extract the best benefits without overshadowing who really is the top billing, which is the president.
What are people saying about Newsom behind the scenes?
Very talented, clearly wants to run for president, not in 24. And if it opened up, I suppose he would in 28. And I think all of this stuff about why would he be debating DeSantis and the criticism coming from some people in the White House is absurd. Look, Ronald Reagan and Robert Kennedy debated each other on national television in 1967 before either of them had decided to run for president the next year. There's nothing wrong with having that debate, and I think it would do nothing but help Joe Biden. The other thing, Melanie, I would say is these aides who sit around saying, well, we don't want the president to be overshadowed. You know what? By the nature of the system, no one overshadows the president of the United States. I mean, Lyndon Johnson didn't pick Robert Kennedy for vice president because he didn't want to be overshadowed. He wouldn't have been overshadowed. He would have been in a much stronger position than he ended up.
And let's talk now about the Senate race, which has kind of been overshadowed by the presidential race a little bit. Of course, we've got high-profile Democrats, Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, Barbara Lee, all Democratic members of Congress running, Eric Early running as a Republican. How do you handicap where things are at as we head in past Labor Day and things get pretty serious as we head towards March?
I think things still feel a bit in a stasis right now. I mean, the candidates are out there. They're making visits. They're on the picket lines, for example, and sort of checking in with their constituencies. But the truth is that things have been relatively quiet. And I think that we're going to see that change probably in the post-Labor Day run-up, right? So we'll see some events around Labor Day. This is a great opportunity, particularly for Democrats, to check in with their friends and labor unions. I think that mostly we've seen over the summer a lot of fundraising. And what I would like to see, particularly from Congressman Adam Schiff, who really is sitting on such a big war chest, is when he starts spending that money, what does that do to the dynamics of the race? These, particularly the Democrats, are so close policy-wise that they have to figure out how to differentiate themselves. And he has the money more than either of them or either of his opponents to do it.
Bob, how do you handicap the race?
Well, I have one sure conclusion, or almost sure conclusion. Unlike the Senate race or the governor's, the Senate race in 2016, you're going to have a Republican in the final. There are three strong Democrats, so I think a Republican is going to be able to come in second place probably, maybe even first, but then get annihilated in the fall. Secondly, I agree with Melanie that there's a tremendous financial advantage for Adam Schiff. Now, that doesn't always work. He's got to have a message that's resonant with and connects with voters. But he begins from a very strong place because people know him. They identify him. Democrats identify him with the Trump impeachments and with the with going after the president for trying to do that deal with Ukraine about Joe Biden. So he begins in a very, very strong position. But I also agree with Melanie. We don't know yet. I mean, we don't know how these three Democrats are going to shake out.
And Katie Porter's obviously got a big following as well, does very well on cable news. And we'll see if there are debates, you know, what that's like, too.
And she's got a lot of strength among young people.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of young people, next week on The Issue is legendary political pundit Chris Matthews will be joining us, which I'm excited about. You know, he's been in the news lately as pictures of his hardball college tour have resurfaced. Some familiar faces went to that college tour when it was at Harvard. So here's the Harvard version. You recognize this guy? That's a young Pete Buttigieg, now transportation secretary, as a Harvard student. Here's his Harvard classmate. Let's show him now. We're talking about Vivek Ramaswamy, who, of course, is a Republican presidential candidate. They weren't the only ones, though, to attend the hardball college tour back in the day. When it came to USC, recognize this guy? Well, yeah, that's me. And some of my Phi Kappa Psi fraternity brothers. And Melanie Mason, I know you attended the college tour when it went to Georgetown. Here's a picture of you at a separate event with another familiar face. I don't know if anybody recognizes the guy behind her. She helped to organize this event. And Bob, I know you didn't attend the Hardball College Tour in college, although you may have attended it when you were on that show all the time. But we do have a pic of a young Bob Schrum. Look at this guy, winning awards from way back in the day at his time at Loyola here in L.A. and at Georgetown. Looking good there, Bob. Yeah. Our thanks to Bob and Melanie. And now our conversation with the top Democrat in the California Senate, Toni Atkins, who's been in that role since 2018. Before that, she led the assembly in California. She announced this week that there is a successor in place, Mike McGuire, who's her number two currently. He's going to be taking over in the new year. She's also pushing really hard for the Bridge Act, which moves forward this week in Sacramento. And we got to talk about her love of Dolly Parton as well, and the love of the love of her life, Jennifer. Here's our conversation with Senator Atkins. The Senate President Pro Tem is the most powerful figure in California. Senate this week, the Democrats in Sacramento voted Mike McGuire as the new leader, who will take over for Toni Atkins next year. Toni Atkins is right there. She has led the state Senate since 2018. The senator from San Diego previously led the California Assembly. Senator Atkins, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Alex.
So why the announcement about a transition right now, and why Mike McGuire as a replacement?
Well, Mike has the support of his colleagues in the Senate. He has been my majority leader, and so we've worked together for the last 5 years. It's a natural progression, and I think right now, because the caucus pretty much came together to support him. And when that happens, you need to make the transition, or at least announce a transition. We have 2 weeks to go. And I think it's really important that we're able to move past that determination and decision, because when it starts to happen, it happens, and you need to really make the transition. We've got 2 weeks of hard work to go. And so I want to make sure that we stay focused on the work that's before us in the legislature and get that done.
And so the transition itself will happen early next year?
Mike and I haven't talked about it yet, but that's the anticipation, early 2024. And so we'll get through this session, get the work done, and then we'll have conversations about what that transition looks like and when.
So you have served with so many high-profile leaders over the last several years in Sacramento. What do you think is the most important lesson about leadership you've learned during that time?
Well, whether it's about leadership or any job you want to do, I think listening, paying attention to what's going on around you, and understanding that everybody comes with a perspective and with goals that they want to accomplish. My Republican colleagues, my Democratic colleagues, the legislative branch, the executive branch. And you just have to understand the job is to work through issues with all of those people, all of those groups. And it's so true. We have some incredible leaders in California, from Governor Brown, Governor Newsom. I've served with two pro tems and three. You know, see, it's hard to keep the math. Three speakers. I've negotiated six budgets. This will be my sixth end of session in the Senate. So, you know, I feel like I feel fortunate to have this experience, and I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to serve not just my community of San Diego, but California.
Who is the biggest jerk of all of them? No, just kidding.
Oh, no. They may say me. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about you. When you were a little girl growing up in Virginia, did you ever imagine a career like this?
Oh, no. You know, Alex, I just wanted to be considered part of society. I mean, I grew up in a house with no running water. We didn't have health care. My dad was a lead and a coal miner, later a construction worker. My mom worked in factories. We had no running water. The house was, well, you know, rural poverty. So all I wanted was to be able to fit in and to be part of society. And of course not. I could have never imagined this.
And then you ended up in San Diego, and then you ended up with Jennifer, who is now your spouse. How did Jennifer change your life?
Well, I think she had the confidence I needed to learn for myself. Jennifer really helped support that. She grew up internationally, originally from Ohio, but grew up internationally in a diplomatic family. So it was a colliding of two very different worlds. But I think similar values. You know, she grew up in some third world countries, and her love of economic development, infrastructure, housing, just matched very closely with my goals and my values. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful partnership. We celebrate our 15th year of marriage this next week. And of course, we've been together longer. We were able to get married 15 years ago, but it's been a wonderful partnership. Thank you for asking about Jennifer.
Happy anniversary to you.
Thank you.
And you think about what a journey the state has been to even allow you to be married, because of course that wasn't legal before then. And now you're continuing to advocate for LGBTQ legislation. You're advocating for something called SB 447, known as the Bridge Bill. What is that? How would that work?
Well, the Bridge Act 447, thank you, Alex. What it will do is basically create a program, an educational outreach program, that would go across America and really replace, rescind the travel ban. You know, we started the ban, and it effectively applied to probably three or four states. Namely, you'll remember the discussion between us and North Carolina about the bathroom ban. And so it was effectively a ban and a travel ban. But now we're at 26 states, and while I think it was effective in the beginning to send a message of we are different, we are a beacon, we think it is better to be inclusive, you know, it began to lose its power the more states that we're effectively not able to travel to, you know, with the support of the state and our very important roles. And we needed to do a shift or a pivot to be able to send the message of inclusion and diversity and acceptance. And we think this is a better way to do that by being present, not isolating ourselves away from 26 other states by not technically being able to go there. And so, you know, it would be a campaign, an educational campaign to spread love and diversity and acceptance, building bridges.
So essentially, instead of saying California workers aren't allowed to travel to these other states on official business, there's going to be an educational outreach campaign in those states funded by California. Is that it?
Effectively, yes. It's a donation-driven program of messaging. And you've seen some of this on TV. I mean, I like to think of the best examples I can give is when we watch sports, you know, the big game, whether it's the Super Bowl or some national competition, you typically see really positive ads or commercials that highlight what it means to be a diverse athlete or someone struggling for success against adversity. And those typically are very positive messages. The one I remember from being a kid was a Coca-Cola commercial. You may be too young, Alex, to remember this, but it was a song, "I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony." And everybody grabs hands and holds hands across the world, across the globe. And I never forgot that. I mean, that was 50 years ago. And I still remember the impact or what that felt like to me, that was warm, that was nice. You see it with my personal favorite, Dolly Parton. She's got billboards she is in California. I would only assume they're elsewhere. And the message is, be kind. Kindness matters. And I think for us in California, you know, I heard stories coming to me about academic researchers who couldn't travel on the UC or the CSU, our higher educational institutions, to do research because they couldn't use university or campus funds to do the travel. They had to come up with their own money. And so the stories continued to accumulate. And I thought, well, this isn't working. If we can't be present in communities to communicate with other people, it's the personal contact that really makes the difference. It's being up close and personal and knowing people. It's what changed my parents' view of a daughter who came out to them as a lesbian. It was that interaction. And so the campaign would be an educational outreach campaign, donation-driven, with a national campaign organization. No politicians, no candidates. It's really about the messaging.
By the way, not only do I remember that ad, but so do the producers of Mad Men. I don't know if you watched that show.
Spoiler. You know, I miss a few things. I miss a few things
okay.
now and then.
All right. Spoiler alert. Don't watch the finale then. Or maybe do watch the finale.
That's okay. I may go right to that.
It's a huge part of it.
Yeah. You've piqued my interest.
Yeah. All right. Well, recently, when the governor and lieutenant governor were out of state, you served as acting governor, signing some bills, first LGBTQ person to do that. You know, did this feel good? When you were doing that, you thought, this looks okay.
I was really nervous.
Are you seriously now considering a run for governor in 2026?
Well, I think that's way premature. Was it cool to be able to sign three bills that were important to three legislators, one being our new speaker? Absolutely. But, Alex, I was really mindful of being a woman and LGBTQ and the shoulders I have stood on. To be able to do that and what it meant for those communities to see someone like them, it harkens back to the Bridge Act, which is if I had grown up in a community where I saw positive images, I would have felt more confident coming into the world about who I was. And I didn't have that. And so I think it's really important. I'm making a nexus, obviously, to standing in and being able to sign a few bills. A young kid from Appalachia who grew up in poverty, who came to my adopted home of California and was given every opportunity. I want every young kid to feel that. I know what it feels like to be the other, different, looked down upon, whether because I'm a Southern Appalachian by birth or whether I'm a woman or LGBTQ. I know what that feels like. And to be able to be in a position of power and influence to be used for something as wonderful as diversity, that feels good. And of course, you know, the saddest thing is my parents are no longer here. So they didn't get to see the positive influence they had on my life. And I just want every young person to be able to feel that. And the Bridge Act really is a part of that bigger set of values. In not just California, but across the country. California was a beacon for me.
So it sounds like you may run for governor, you just haven't decided yet.
Oh, you did ask that question. You know, I'm passionate about service, and we'll see. I really am serious. If you ask me about leadership, what I've learned is I need to stay focused on what's in front of me. And what's in front of me is this legislation that we have worked all year, hundreds of bills, that my colleagues and I have worked all year to bring to completion. I cannot have anything divert from that because that would not be honoring the process. And so I'm going to be focused on the next few weeks, and then I'm going to be focused on working with Senator McGuire, the pro tem designee, to figure out how we move into next year. And then I have some time to think about that. I would like to serve. We will see in what way I may have an opportunity to do that.
We know you are obsessed with Dolly Parton. What is it about Dolly?
She is so authentically herself, and she somehow always has been. And I just really love that. I mean, I love her music. I grew up on her music. She's from just down the road from where I grew up in Tennessee, Sevier County. And she has used her talent to be successful, but then you think about what she's done with that. We were able, Shannon Grove, Republican Shannon Grove from Bakersfield, and I were able to work together to support and bring to California Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, which is about literacy and kindness. And it's just a coming together of all my worlds, which I love. I just think Dolly is a real icon, but someone who does it in a way that is about positive and happiness. And I think she's a wonderful role model.
All right. Well, we play a game on this show called Personal Issues, where we put 30 seconds on the clock and ask you about your cultural favorites. You've played this before, but we're doing a special version just for you. And the questions are only about Dolly Parton.
So
here we go. Your Dolly Parton favorites. What's your favorite Dolly song of all time?
Well, I have many, but the first that comes to mind is Smoky Mountain Memories.
Favorite Dolly album?
Oh, gosh. They're all, you can't do that.
All right.
They're all, best, she's got so many.
Best Dolly duet?
Oh, Islands in the Stream.
Best movie Dolly's in?
Steel Magnolias.
Very nice. Over 9 to 5. there we go.
Strong women, strong women.
Love it. Senator Tony Atkins, thank you so much. We hope sometime you will join us in studio to dance to Dolly music with us.
Our thanks to Senator Atkins and to Bob and to Melanie, and thanks to you for listening. Next week, Ro Khanna will be with us, the Democratic congressman coming to our studio, and a conversation with Chris Matthews, one of my childhood heroes that got me excited about this business, and I can't wait to talk politics with him here on The Issue Is. In the meantime, like us, subscribe, rate us, let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate it, and we'll see you next week for more of The Issue Is.